All right, everybody, welcome back to the table. It's been a great week. It's been a quiet week for us from the running world, but it's great to have everybody back. Please pull up a chair, grab your favorite drink, or if you're out listening to us, while you're out walking, mowing the yard, doing something active. Appreciate it. Thanks for getting outside, but thanks for joining an hour with us out of your day to take a listen into the meeting of the unknowing minds. Once again, as always, my name is Matt Eshy, the head cross country coach, associate head track and field coach at UAB, and your host. With me as our media guru from the UTRGV, survived some of the storms despite some damage. Darren Flowers, Darren, how's everything down there?
Man, we're surviving. Had a lot of cleanup due to that hurricane, but hey, glad to be breathing and excited for the conversation today.
So is that track okay? Are you guys going to get a new one out of that?
We're trying, man. We're trying.
Nice. We've got from St. Louis University, Mr. John Bell. John, how we doing, sir?
Doing well. Great to be back as always.
Good. It's always like to hear. I'm up in Bloomington, Indiana, in this same spot, chilling on the couch with some books in the background. I can never tell what they actually are, so I think they might be decoration. But we got great jumps multis coach Mike Erb. How we doing, sir?
I'm good. That's by design. The more books you have, the smarter you look. So I try to, you know, and just far enough away is the camera so you can't really see what they actually are, you know. So good to be here.
Smart, because if you actually can read what they are, you actually may have to make sure that you actually read the books.
Yeah, I don't want any questions.
And as well, from the great city of Waukesha, but he's out of VCU, Mr. Tom Sage. How we doing, sir?
Doing well. How about yourself?
I'm not too bad at all. Excited to be here watching this thing take off. It is a hot, blistery, humid day here in Birmingham. Whew, tell you what. So with us today, we've got a couple special guests. Been excited. Jacked all week about having these two on the podcast for the first time. We've got the head cross country coach, assistant distance coach. I believe that I have that right, coach, Mr. Mark Burns. How are we doing, sir?
Good, good. Thanks for having us on.
Yeah, I appreciate you not doing the dual camera mode again. As much as we like seeing both sides, one is actually okay with us. You know, you don't have a good side. You just got one side.
So. That's right.
Okay. And unbelievably blessed and excited to join us, or to have join us, excuse me, from Urbandale, Iowa, Dowling Catholic, the University of Missouri, now with the Bowerman Track Club, Miss Carissa Schweitzer. Carissa, thanks for joining us.
Yes, thank you. I'm excited.
Yeah, this is going to be fun. So let's get into it a little bit. Normally, we like to do this week in track and field. And again, there's been some high school times that have been popping. I think some out in Connecticut, some guys have been lowering their 800 records, state records. Get into a couple of big things going on Friday night are going to be first off, so we won't steal too much thunder here, but the Portland Track Club Friendly, I think it's called the Big Friendly Number 3, from, you're going to, like, Craig Engels, Donovan Brazier, Drew Wendell are going to be going after Donovan Brazier's American record again, which is, what, 142.34 and change. I'm blown away it's that fast, but I know those gentlemen are flying. So they're going to be going after it, but then I know Chanel Price, Brenda Martinez, Shannon Roberry. I know Shannon Roberry's at least going to be running a 1500. There's some really good professional action going on tonight. But we're also excited. We're going to get back to it here with Carissa. Carissa will be racing in the 4x1500, the mixed 4x1500, excuse me, not mixed. Hold on, I got that wrong. There'll be a 4x1500 men and a 4x1500 women with a Bowerman Track Club. And the ice will call the Track Club Friendly. I don't know what we really want to call it. Carissa, what will we call it?
Probably just Portland Inter Squad Meet 3. Nothing exciting. I mean, four.
Okay. Portland Inter Squad Meet. It sounds a lot like Jerry. Just make it a very simple title. Don't even put some.
Yes. So, just a new number.
Yeah. Up it goes. And so you guys will have a mixed 4x8 and a 4x4. But we, before we dive into a couple of interviews, so the 4x1500, can you tell us who's racing tonight?
Yeah. It'll be me, Shelby, Elise, and Colleen Quigley.
Whew, that'll be fast. And you guys are going after, am I correct? Tell me, you're going after an American and a world record in 4x15?
Yes, going for the American, but shooting for the world record as well.
Okay. Everything goes perfectly, go after the world, but hopefully you can go ahead and smash 4x15.
Carissa, do you know where can we watch that?
Yeah.
USATF.tv. It will be live, and then I think the Bowerman YouTube channel will show it for free the next day.
Awesome.
Definitely get that up in the, somebody remind me if we don't, but we'll get that up in the bio to make sure everybody can see that. We'll put a little pub out this evening to make sure everybody's watching, because those are phenomenal things. That's one thing, actually, Chris, we've talked about a lot of this podcast is promoting the sport as much as we can, because you guys are doing some great things with the little inner squad meets that you guys are having. So we're excited about that. Now the men are going after a 4x15 record as well.
Yes, they're going after the American and maybe even the world record as well.
Do you know who's running that one? Do you remember?
I believe it's going to be maybe like Grant, Sean, Mo, and Lopez, possibly. I'm not completely positive on their order. They might be more two split equal ones, but I'm not sure.
Gotcha. That's going to be some fun racing tonight, though, under the lights and
everything. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Nice. Well, we're going to come back to that here in a second, but we want to start with Coach Mark Burns, if we can, a little bit. Coach, again, thanks for being on here. Thanks for doing this for us. To do a quick little thing with all of our guests, we've done this. Why did you get into coaching? Why are you a coach, and how did you get into it?
Well, yeah, first of all, thanks for having us on. And I also want to thank Carissa for coming on. I know, you know, race days are tough, and I really appreciate you coming on and supporting my boy Coach Eshie's podcast and all my good friends on the call here too. So, you know, I was really fortunate coming up through the sport to have some phenomenal coaches. And I think that's really why I coach now. They kind of instilled an amazing passion for the sport into me at a young age. Great mentors, really family oriented type of team programs that they each instilled in our programs. We have, you know, quite a few coaches out there from our teams. You know, probably the most prominent one would be Coach McCraven at Texas A&M. He and I were middle school and high school teammates. You know, great friends, stood up in each other's weddings, and I've just been super friends over the years. And it all started through running, you know. And Mr. Vernon, our guy who coached us through middle school, was what a guy. He passed away a couple years ago, and Coach McCraven and I were fortunate enough to be asked to come and speak at his funeral. What a great friend and mentor he was over the years. And then Mr. Nagel, Mr. Saylor, and a slew of other assistants at the high school level were really played a big role in that. And then Coach Thompson for me at the Loyola University of Chicago, my college coach, was just a great friend. He still is. He ended up standing up in my wedding. That's how close we are, and certainly gave me my, you know, first shot into coaching, which I'm very grateful for, because most people have to, you know, go the volunteer route, GA route. And I went out and sold candy for 4 years, for crying out loud, you know, and kind of did some illegal recruiting for him. I was just so hooked on the sport that I'd sneak out and watch high school meets for him all the time, and just, hey, you might want to look at this kid. You might want to look at this kid. I think the statute of limitations are up on that, so should be good. But you know, his longtime assistant coach left, and he said, man, you know, you keep telling me how much you want to get into the sport. And I said, yeah, I do. And he said, all right, I'm going to bring you in. I want you to coach the women's team. And so I actually had a chance. I'm one of the few that had a chance to jump right in and coach the women's team at Loyola University right away. And that was a tremendous experience, you know, and really got me going in my career. And, you know, you go from the corporate world to the coaching world, and you know, I had to take a 50% pay cut to do it, but I've never looked back, and been a great ride ever since.
Which, I mean, 50% cut right now, that's incredible to be able to take that. And a lot of people don't have that faith to be able to do that and take that. Even if they know that, like, hey, I got a nice job waiting, they don't want to take that cut and leave the corporate world, because there is money, and money is a big factor on it. So how'd you get to Mizzou? I mean, where'd you start out? How did you get to Mizzou? But and I know Mizzou has a special place for you as well.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. You know, spent 10 years at Loyola University, and had a, you know, it's great. What an honor it is to coach at your alma mater. You know, I ran there, and a special place. Always have a special place in my heart for sure. And it was a great, great, great thing to be able to coach there for 10 years. And got a men's team to the NCAA championships in 2005. Which was the first time ever that we had a team get to the national championships. And we had what a great middle distance history there at Loyola, from Tom O'Hara to Eddie Slowakowski, Jim Westfall, some just amazing athletes that went through there, and lots of guys from the 70s, All-Americans. Yeah, it was awesome. And, you know, got married, had a kid, and we really wanted to just kind of broaden our horizons a little bit and be able to afford a house. That was nice. You know, we're living in a one-bedroom condo. Our kids playing on a busy street. We're like, good God, what are we doing? You know, cars whipping by down the side streets, and it's tough to raise a family in the city of Chicago. So, ironically, Wendell McCraven had called me and said, hey, you know, what are you thinking? What are you going to do? Or, you know, are you going to be at Loyola your whole career? Because a lot of people thought I was, because it was my alma mater. And said, no, actually, we just had a conversation about that. And we're kind of open to, you know, to branching out. And he's like, well, you're not going to believe this, but I just heard Coach Hassenbank is moving from Wichita State to Alabama. And Coach Rainbow's looking for a distance coach. Would you be interested? And I said, yeah, you know, let me connect me with him. And anybody that knows Coach Rainbow knows that it only takes one conversation to get connected with him. You know, I mean, what a tremendous human being, great track and field coach, great head coach. That staff has been in place ever since I left. It's the same staff outside of Kirk Hunter who took over for me. So that says a lot about a head coach when you can keep a staff together that long. And that continuity has allowed them to be very, very successful, you know, over that period of time. So we ended up going out there and we were out there 4 years, had a great run, man, got the opportunity to recruit and coach Kellen Johnson, who's now Kellen Taylor, running for Ben Rosario and those guys up in Flagstaff, and just has had a tremendous post-collegiate career as well. So that was a great time there. And then had an opportunity to become the head coach of, you know, the entire program at Bradley. Craig Dahlquist, always been a good friend of mine. He also coached at Loyola before me. So we had a little connection there. Got to go there and they pumped a lot of money into the program. Yep. Was fortunate enough to con Coach Esche into coming to work for me there and work together with me to build that program. And he and I really built it from the ground up. We got, you know, men's track and field going again there, which is a Herculean task. Thanks to Craig Dahlquist and our AD Mike Cross and President Glasser there, that was an amazing feat, I felt like, there. And when the time came to make a move, we weren't looking. Coach Halter had called me, and ironically, again, my boy Coach McCraven was looking out for me, saw that there was a change being made there, and kind of reached out to Coach Halter on my behalf, and worked out well. You know, we got the opportunity to go to Mizzou. Always wanted to have an opportunity to coach at a big Power Five type of school. That Mizzou is my first school to have football. Of all the, you know, after 20 some years of coaching, none of my schools had football. Not that that really mattered, but that was kind of neat to be at a bigger school like that and have some more resources to work with. And my dad's an alum of Mizzou. Yeah. So that was pretty cool. You know, he's very excited that I'm coaching here, and you know, it was always kind of a dream of mine to Mizzou was kind of on my bucket list for coaching because of that, because I grew up a huge Mizzou fan because of my dad. So it was easy. You know, my parents are in Kansas City. They retired and they're in Kansas City still, so they're close here. And my wife's hometown is in Rushville, Illinois, so that's only 3 hours away. So from a geographical standpoint, it was a no-brainer. And Coach Halter's been amazing. You know, as a head coach here at Mizzou, and has really given me a lot of latitude to do the things that we've done so far, and has been a great partner. And we've got a great staff here, great resources. We've got some big news coming on some facility fronts that I can't say right now, but super excited about what's happening. In addition to our championship cross country course, I think there's going to be some big time indoor meets coming to Mizzou soon. And if you know what I'm talking about, they wouldn't be happening on a flat Hearn Center track. So lots of exciting things happening over here. And that's still in the works, but it's looking pretretty promising at this point. And anyway, just really thrilled to be here. Love this place. And I mean, come on, I got a chance to coach Carissa Schweitzer. So, you know, how could you go wrong there, right?
Wait, who's Carissa Schweitzer? I can't that one. No,
she's getting naming rights, right, Coach? She's getting naming rights. So.
Hey, she received a telephone call this week, as a matter of fact. So yeah, she will absolutely. Cool. We're gonna work her in somewhere. A legend like that deserves to be prominently placed in front of everybody.
You're not kidding. I will say this, jumping back for 30 seconds, that I think one of the biggest tasks when you and I was fortunate enough to get the call from you to, and the email actually, to work with you and to have an idea that this was all going to happen to Bradley between you and I mean, I was unbelievably blessed to do that. And it was a whim. You talk about coming in kind. I came in on a part-time salary. I was making $20,000, I think, if I'm not mistaken. I was working way more my first year. You know, Mr. Dahlquist, who was an incredible gentleman. You're right, Mr. Dahlquist, Dr. Cross, President Glasser were phenomenal. But somehow he made things happen, and he had a vision maybe above ours, and he was pushing that thing forward. So the how we set things up and some of the national qualifiers that we had were great. But I think one of the biggest things that we ever did was bringing back men's track and field. How that got brought back is incredible, and it's still surviving in today's climate, which is, again, unheard of.
Yeah, let's hope it continues to survive.
I know, scary. Right? Scary, I think we can all say we're scared of that. Yeah. So you've had some incredible athletes. Again, you mentioned Kellen, again, Wisconsin girl. You mentioned her from Sussex, and you had her time at when you were at Wichita State. You had some incredible athletes and some great teams at Loyola. I remember that 05 team because I think we were second in the region. We should have won, and your team was fifth and snuck in. I can't remember if it was you beat Alabama or Eastern Michigan or something like that down here. I can't remember who you beat, but you beat one of those teams to sneak in on the backside.
Eastern Michigan at our place. And Coach Chapman, I got to give him some props because he brought the Indiana crew over. And that was before the Jeffersons were ready to run yet. So we ended up beating them. And I think it was back when the rules were that you only had to have three out of your seven to make an A team.
Yep.
And so we literally beat those guys, and Eastern Michigan was second, Indiana was third, and then they put all those guys in at the regional meet, made it. And so we were the lottery winner that year in the process that we have. You know, there's always a team at the back end of our qualifying process that's kind of the lottery winner, and we were that lottery winner that year. I think we scored a record point when we got there, but it was a heck of a deal for us. It was good for the program.
It didn't matter. You got there. And again, first time in history to do it, which is an unbelievable achievement in itself. And they've done a good job. And Randy got the chance to get over there for a little bit to help take off. And Lilo's done a good job. But so you've had those phenomenal athletes. And then, you know, Chris, you go to Mizzou. Carissa Schweitzer's there. If I'm not mistaken, she's there as a freshman. You take over the program. But what was it like to watch her grow a little bit? We're going to ask her the same question here too, here in a couple minutes. But what is it like to see a girl? Because again, freshman year, she was good. Sophomore year, she was good, getting better. And then all of a sudden she takes off, and now you've got a national level athlete and then a world level athlete, really. What was that like?
Yeah, it was an amazing ride. No question about it. I mean, you know, first and foremost, the credit goes to her. She's just an amazing person, amazing athlete. The work ethic is just ridiculous. You know, she would do anything and everything to be the best that she could be as far as training goes. You know, when I sent a training plan home with her, I knew that she was going to do it from A to Z. And, you know, as we're all coaches on here, so we know we've got some kids that we send a training plan home with. And if we go, you know, hey, I want you to do, you know, 5 to 7 times this, that there's a certain group that are going to do 4 or 5. And there's a couple kids that may do 5 or 6. And then there's maybe 1 or 2 that do the whole amount, you know, and it almost was too, you know, made me nervous because she would complete a workout no matter how she felt. She would finish it. And then she'd call me. She's like, I felt terrible. I'm like, well, what was wrong? She's like, well, I was sick. It was 20 mile an hour winds. And, you know, she was trying to hit the times on but I gave her for like a perfect day when you're feeling good. And, you know, so she was awesome, you know, to have the opportunity to coach her was pretty amazing. You know, she was a pretty darn good athlete her freshman, sophomore year. She ran, 4:45 her freshman year, 9:20, as a freshman coming in off a running like 9:54 in high school, and 4:36. So like 4:56 or so in high school. So, and then sophomore year, and she qualified for nationals as a freshman in cross, which was super exciting. And then sophomore year had a little sophomore jinx in the cross country season. We had a rough cross country season for one reason or another. Just didn't go quite to plan. And to her credit, she bounced back and was more determined than ever to come back and just pound some people and came back, had a great indoor season, and then ended up, you know, third at the outdoor NCAA meet in the 5K, and you know, was second to Dominique Scott in all the SEC stuff. So she really, second or third, she really established herself, I thought, outdoor track sophomore year as a national figure. And then she really took off, obviously. Great summer of training, came back in the fall, and we had a meet at Iowa, and opening meet at Iowa, and all her whole family's out there, and we didn't run her, you know. And I was like, Mike's like, her dad's like, come on, coach, man, can't you just let her run? Like, just, we're all here, just let her go out there and run. I said, Mike, trust me, like, you don't need to see her run today, because you're going to see her run really deep into November. Like, she is at a different level. We got to play this right. We got to make sure she's ready to go at the right time. And he's like, okay, I trust you guys. You know, I trust you guys. And it worked out pretty well that year. So
when she gets going a little bit, when Chris gets going, she gets to that national level, and all of a sudden she's, you know, wins the national title in cross country, wins indoors, and all of a sudden, like, huh, this could be a professional thing. Like, I'd assume some calls quietly, you've got buddies all over the sport. Excuse me. I'm well aware of that. Calls start coming in. For somebody who's never dealt with having professional phone calls or from agents, excuse my dad, shoe companies call. Like, I've got friends, but I've never had that phone call, you know, saying, hey, want to think about talking to Carissa. How do you deal with that as a coach? And how did you deal with helping her manage expectations and, you know, kind of essentially be an agent without being an agent? That's really her work.
Yeah, I think, you know, Coach Halter was a big help. He had gone through with Christian Cantwell and a few others that he has coached over the years. And so he had quite a bit of experience, you know, certainly made a bunch of calls around to colleagues and peers, and, you know, people have gone through that to get some information and some help from them. And really we sat Carissa down and we said, hey, here's the deal. Like, you know, first of all, we want to make sure you want to run post-collegiately. This is what you want. She's like, coach, I want to be standing on the podium at the Olympic Games. I said, okay. Then we got to find the right place for you to do this at, and the right people to represent you. And we've got to do it at a time when there's going to be a ton of pressure on you to perform in your senior year. So the mission from day one was to try to shield her as much as possible, allow her to just focus on her senior year, give her the opportunity to be successful and get out there and do what she does best. And to every agent's credit, they were amazing. All four that we ended up sitting down with were professional, very, very respectful of everybody's time and everything. And I thought that was amazing, because it can be a pretty cutthroat, you know, world to be in. And they were all amazing. And all four that we sat down with were incredible. I think she would have been in good hands no matter who she chose. And I think in the end, you know, the right fit for her from a training standpoint was BTC and Coach Schumacher. You know, and a lot of people were in my ear saying, why aren't you going to coach her? And I said, you know, I would love to coach her. I, you know, it was the hardest thing I could ever do was to not, you know, coach her after college. But I also knew that, you know, what her goals were and what she needed to get there. And, you know, me with my job here at Mizzou, a family of four boys that were, you know, that are super active, and, you know, I want to be dad too. And I knew that I couldn't do what she needed done. You know, I knew we couldn't quite do what she needed to get to the level she's already at. And Jerry was amazing through the process. Super thankful for him and taking the time to talk through a lot of stuff. And I think it was a no-brainer at the end of the conversation. She, you know, everybody was great, but I think she found a home there. And the best part, this is the best part of the story, is, you know, Tom Ratcliffe is her agent and Alistair Craig was great. And then Jerry's her coach, you know, and the boys, my boys are like, man, I'm so glad she chose Tom, because now she's with Tom and Jerry. And they love the cartoon Tom and Jerry. It's like, man, that's so awesome, man. She's going to be with Tom and Jerry. You know, like, oh, you guys are nuts. But anyway, it's been a great decision. You know, she did a great job sifting through. Her family was amazing. And it was quite the process. It was a lot of fun. Great to get to know all those guys. You know, I hope that I can, you know, we as a staff here can develop some more athletes that, you know, have those same type of opportunities down the road. And, you know, I think we've got some pretty good ones here that hopefully will get there. But, you know, Chris is really, I mean, she is. She's a once in a career type of person to coach. You know, to have the combination of the ability level, the mindset, You know, the fact that she is just a great person, a great, comes from a phenomenal family, very humble, willing to do, you know, anything for anybody. Like the fact that she comes on here the day of a race, I think is amazing. She's been super gracious with her time throughout the quarantine. I know she's been on a lot of high school Zoom calls. She came on one of our team Zoom calls. You know, people asked me what it was like to coach her. And the best example I have was when we went to Madison Square Garden for the Milrose Games when she broke the collegiate record in the 3K. Mm-hmm. And it was like, you know, it was like traveling with the freaking Beatles, you know, or Michael Jordan or something, you know, like traveling with her. And people just, you know, you run into the track world and everybody wants to talk to her. Everybody wants to get a picture with her. It took us 45 minutes after the race when she broke the collegiate record to get out of the armory to get a cool down in, because she probably took 100 photos, signed about, 500 autographs. And she was adamant and wanted to take care of everybody before she left that building to go cool down. And then we went up to the top where her parents were sitting. Mm-hmm. And there was a group of young women, high school age women, in the front row there in front of her parents. And they kind of heard us talking to them. And they turned around, and you should have seen how big their eyes got when they saw Carissa standing behind her that day. It was just cool, you know, like I think she realizes the role model that she is to all of the young men and women in our sport. And she really accepts that and wants to be, you know, the best she can be for everybody. And she wants to give back as much as she can. So the whole package, it's amazing.
It's incredible. And true story, we got a couple questions here in a second, but for you, Brinzy, but Chris, I do remember this actually. I know I'm not going to, my wife and I actually were here in Birmingham, and we were eating dinner at one of our favorite pizza places right down the road. And ESPN had the tape broadcast of the SEC championships in the 10K, and you were rolling. I mean, which again, wouldn't expect anything less, but it was hilarious watching you rock and roll. And I remember, my wife looked at me and I heard a couple in front of us start talking, and they're like, who is that blonde girl from Mizzou just rolling everybody right now? It was literally what they said. And I had to laugh a little bit because I had to go up and talk to them and explain the sport, but they were watching you just in awe and they were having a blast with it. But I came back and my wife, I think, had eaten almost all the pizza. That was a great distraction, but I went home hungry with that kind of stuff. but John, you mentioned you had a question. Go ahead.
Yeah, so Mark, kind of a post Carissa question now that, you know, she graduates, obviously has a ton of success. What's it been like as you recruit other kids, you know, high school level that want to come to Mizzou and say they want to be the next Carissa Schweitzer? I mean, how running into that and kind of how do you manage? Because that's not for everybody, right? And so how do you manage those expectations and kind of what have you seen?
Yeah, it's been interesting because it's kind of a double-edged sword, to be honest. Like, you know, first of all, it's opened up a ton of doors for us from a recruiting standpoint, without a doubt. You know, talking to, you know, a whole nother level of recruit. We haven't, you know, necessarily landed all of them in the end, but we're in the door and we have a shot at talking to them. So I think that's been a huge piece. You know, and it's kind of interesting that the double-edged side of it is, it's opened up a ton of doors, but then you get these kids on campus and they look up at the record board and they're like, crap, man, if I come here, I'm not going to ever get a school record. You know, how am I supposed to get a school record at that place? My God. And I'm like, hey, you know, she came in with marks just like you. You never know, you know, that's why you do it. And I think it's been a huge help to our program across the board, and not just on the distance side, but just, you know, putting our program, you know, even that much more on the map. We've had some great athletes over the years. Heck, we had a weight throw national champion in Kirsten Peoples in 2015 and or 14 or 15. And so that's been a big part. But yeah, it's definitely helped us for sure. You know, and the kids that come in, we're like, hey, listen, like, not everybody's going to turn out to be Carissa Schweitzer, but what you can plan from us and that you know you're going to get from us is, that we're going to take good care of you. We're going to work hard to develop you. We're going to do the right things. We're going to communicate and work hard together to help you be the best that you can be. And if something special happens like that, great. But you be the, as long as you are being the best that you can be and doing everything you can to become the best, you know, version of yourself that you can be, then we walk away from here feeling really good about what we accomplished.
No, that's great. I mean, there are big shoes to fill, and you don't want to look up at the record board going, oh man, I got to get that. That's a daunting task. Carissa, you've done some things. And Carissa, I remember when I had the opportunity to actually recruit you a little bit, a little bit of Bradley. I remember the few things I did remember were a couple things that actually Coach Burns talked about with, you know, being very competitive, very dedicated. And you were unbelievable in both in those kind of opportunities. So that was great that Coach even saw those exact same thing Coach Burns did. But from Urbandale, Iowa, Urbandale, Iowa, the big blue track. First question before we get into it, we got a special guest here. We're going to throw it to in a second, but first question before we get into that, you know, you went to the Big Blue Oval. Why, or you ran a Big Blue Oval? Mike Jay, of course, announced your name a ton of times. Why do you end up at Mizzou?
Yeah, kind of different path, but being from Iowa, I wanted to get out of the cold a little bit, but so I was convinced that I wasn't going to look anywhere north. I was like, I can accept the idea of maybe running in Iowa, but I was like, I'm not going to go to Minnesota or anywhere north of that, because my parents are actually both went to Mankato University and they really wanted me to check it out, but I was not about that. And so I looked at Bradley, and I looked at some other schools because I wanted to still be close enough where I could drive home, like probably like 4 or 5 hours was kind of my max. Mm-hmm. And we were kind of set on, we looked at Kansas, we looked at Illinois State, and we looked at Iowa State, and we were kind of set on those three schools. And then after the GRIAC Invitational, we ran into the Mizzou team at Subway, which was very random, but my dad is a big talker, and yep. We can't get him away from strangers. He talks to them more on vacation than he talks to us. And of course, he comes up to the Mizzou coaches and just talking their ear off, saying, I got a daughter here that runs this and this and this. And he's just asking, and we talked about it, and we're like, well, why don't we check them out? And we actually scheduled a official visit, and it was my last visit. And I was pretty set on Iowa State at that point. And I was just like, well, I want to check it out and just see what it's about. And right away, I was like, this is where I want to be. They just kind of sold me on just the idea of a team that can not let already there, but one that wants to work together to get to that like national level. And if you make it to nationals, it's going to be a big deal. And it's going to be something that we're going to like really celebrate, and we wanted to build the program. And I really liked that, because a lot of the other programs I was looking at were either already established or they weren't going to get to that growing level. And mm-hmm. I thought at my position that I was at, I was like, I feel like I'm very respected and they really wanted me. So I took that and I was like, I want to be in a program that's going to really want to develop me as an athlete. Whereas some of the other programs were just like, well, you might struggle to be on our varsity, or you might be like our top runner here. So I liked the idea of growing more at Mizzou. And I looked at the campus and I met all the teammates and stuff like that. And I was just like, this is just a place that I want to be, even if I got injured. So I think I just took those important questions and went with my gut decision. And then I actually ended up, the coach that recruited me ended up leaving. And at that point I had to do another reevaluation, and I didn't know who was going to come in and coach me. And so I was just like, okay, well, I loved it here. And I loved the, I still liked the head coach. I liked the group of people that I would be with every day. And I had to just tell myself, coaches change every day, like all the time. And I wanted to stick it out. So I actually got super lucky with the coach that came in, which is really funny, because I actually went on a unofficial visit at Bradley where he was coaching and met him prior. And then just, we both were new at Mizzou at the time. So I think it was just one of those like perfect storms that actually worked out really well.
He's a great guy. You got lucky with a coach like that. But I've got a, before we get into a few questions with that stuff, Coach Bell, I know you've got a special guest here today that would like to jump in for a couple questions. So go ahead, by all means.
Yeah. First, Carissa, thanks for doing this. Obviously very honored to have you join our fledgling little podcast we have here. also glad to hear, you know, Coach Burns talk about how much you like or have embraced the role, you know, role model. When I told my 15-year-old stepdaughter earlier this week that you were going to be, you know, potentially joining our podcast, she went into full fangirl mode. She's new to the sport. She played tennis this last fall, didn't run cross, and then was going to run track this spring. So we got real excited about that, obviously, and, you know, unfortunately with coronavirus, missed out on her freshman year of track, but was getting all excited for cross country. So she you know, for that to start, and was real excited. And she does have a question here, so she's going to ask a really simple question and go from there.
Yeah, so, I mean, I'm obviously new to it. So, like, sometimes I struggle, like, in tempo runs or, like, time trials. Like, it's so hard to stay focused. But, like, all of you guys, and, like, obviously when you did that amazing 5K, like, how did you focus and, like, not almost, like, give up? Because that was obviously hard.
Yes, for sure. I definitely think staying focused is a hard mental task. And even as professionals, sometimes I feel like I'll be in a race and I'm like, okay, like I'm looking at something. I'm like, no, I need to focus. And especially in that kind of setting, because we didn't have the crowd and we didn't have the atmosphere that we're used to. It almost seemed like all I could hear was like Shelby's breathing. And I'm just like, this is like, I'm literally looking at the grass. I'm looking at this person. I'm like, whoa, Jerry yelled this at us. Like so many things going through my mind. But before I started the race, just like being on the line and knowing the goal at hand was to run sub 14:30, which was just crazy for me to even say that before I even stepped on the line, because my PR prior was 14:45. But here I am on the line against one of the world's best in the 5K. And I'm like, okay, well, I'm shooting for sub 14:30 and I'm going to try to beat her in the process. So to have that kind of confidence and that kind of focus, I think a lot of it comes from the people you're around and you surround yourself every day with at practice and training. And also from your coach who is installing this kind of mental confidence in you. And for me, it was just like, well, we're doing this day and it's going to happen and I'm not going to give up. And I knew on the line, I was like, the one thing that I'm kind of nervous about is that this is going to hurt really bad. And I had to just get that out of my head, because I was like, I'm sticking with her as long as I can, because for me, I want to cross the finish line and just have no regrets and no what if on the line. I want to be like, I definitely gave it my all and I put myself out there. And when I went and watched the race back, I was like, oh, I felt like I should have made a move earlier or something, but I went and watched it and I am just, my form is all messed up towards the end. I was like, well, I know I gave it my all there. There's nothing more I could have done. So I think just really to stay focused is just kind of focus on the task at hand and focus on your goal prior. And I think just with the focus of wanting to walk away happy and proud of yourself, I think that always pushes me, because I hate losing more than I enjoy winning. And I've told people that before, but when I lose, I get so frustrated. Or if I miss out on something I feel like I could have corrected, I'm almost more mad at myself rather than when it all goes perfect and happy with myself. I'm like, that angers more than when I'm like, oh, this is awesome.
That's a great question. I have a follow-up to that.
Aaron, go ahead.
So obviously, this being an Olympic year, everything gets messed up. You're with the group that you're with. And speaking about motivation and focus, how important is it that you're in a group like you're in a time like this? And two, what is the general attitude of the group on showing up every day, training, when there's a lot of uncertainty?
Yeah, it's very difficult. And this year, I mean, We started it off with indoor, and we're all like getting PRs, American records. Like, I was like, this is the Olympic year. This is what it should be like. This is what it feels like. I feel strong heading into this year. And then everything just takes like a 180, and we come to practice, and we're slowly starting to find out the news about like colleges starting to cancel their season. We still think the Olympics are going to happen. Jerry's continuing on with our training. And then finally we get the like day at practice where I like just specifically remember this day, because we find out probably an hour before practice that the Olympics are going to be postponed, maybe even canceled. They didn't actually say for sure yet. And here we are, just like a lot of us are just bummed and like really just confused, not really wanting to work out, because we're just like, what's the point? Like, why are we doing speed today? Because what are we sharpening up for? And here Jerry is just like, this is so exciting. He's like, oh, we get a whole nother year. We are going to get so strong. This. And he's just going off. And I'm just like, what? Like, we just got told it's like postponed. And I was like, when I went back home, I was like, okay, like this is the right group. This is the group I need to be in, because during all this uncertainty, to have like a negative attitude about it all, it's just like, there's nothing we can do. And then also being on top of that, just being mad and angry, it's just like almost pointless. So we kind of just all took that energy and like channeled it towards, well, we're just going to continue on, and we want to continue and make this as normal as a season as we can. We were fortunate enough to get to go up to altitude for a little bit. And when we were up in Park City, Utah, the restrictions weren't nearly as bad as they were in Portland. So we were able to run a little bit more together, but things are definitely still very different with gyms and everything. But our main goal was, when we were up there, we're like, well, we're just going to time trial. We're going to, and Jerry told us, he was like, we might get the 5K American record, but it might just be on my stopwatch. And we're over here just like, this is crazy. Like, I'm going to have my 5K PR on a stopwatch, and I'm going to have to tell people that this is what I ran, and no one's going to
say it. I promise it's valid. I promise.
Yeah. And so as time developed, we were very fortunate enough that Jerry, and just being in this group, that we were allowed the opportunity to make these races count and even have them streamed for people, because unfortunately, we didn't think that was even going to happen. We thought it was just going to be us at the Nike track with Jerry's stopwatch. So we are very fortunate to have that happen and to have these races go on as normal as we can make them. So
well, one thing is
definitely different.
Yeah, and no doubt, one thing we talk a lot about on this podcast and in our discussions is, you know, how we bring the sport to the people, how we make it more popular. And I absolutely love the role that some of these groups have taken in, you know, making it available to the public and their singular events. So if it could be a one-off pole vault, like we talked with Coach Fetzer last week, or even what the Bowerman Track Club's doing right now. I think these are extremely exciting events, and then the fact that you all are performing so well, I think, makes it even better. So can you maybe elaborate on the role of being able to bring these events to people, not just track and field fans, but people that are starved for sports in a time where there's not a lot going on?
Yeah, it's been difficult for people. There's nothing going on, so we just want to bring that sense of community back and just kind of getting that competitive edge, even though we are just competing against each other. Fortunately, we have a huge team, so we get very lucky in the fact that we can be that competitive against each other and not really need outside competition as much. So we've just been trying to go after weird things, like the 4x15 is something you probably never really go after, but in this kind of weird year, we get to do that. And even this meet on Friday and next Friday are actually going to be fundraising opportunities as well for the Equal Justice Initiative. And we hope that people can pledge per second. They can donate if we like how many seconds we break the American record by, or anything like that. And we have that on our Bowerman website. So we're very fortunate enough to be able to bring these races to the community and hopefully even give back during this weird time that we are in.
Yeah, that's great.
That's a pretty incredible thing. How did that come about? How'd you guys do the Equal Justice Initiative? Like, where did who came up with the idea?
Yeah, we all just kind of did like a little poll to see what we wanted to give back to an organization, and we didn't know which one that we wanted to give back to, but we really looked into this one, and this one really helps like fight for just equal justice and fights for people that get wrongly convicted of crimes. And so we just felt like it was the best organization to give back to, and our goal is to donate 15,000 to this program in the next 2 weeks, hopefully even more that we could get. But yeah, we just want to try to give back while we do have this like focus on us.
I think that's amazing that you guys are using your platform right now in an absence of sports to give back to charities and communities that are definitely in need of it. So kudos to you guys. I think that's amazing.
Absolutely. I don't think you can go, can't go wrong in doing something along those lines at all. Going through, what Olympics are canceled, they got and then the USA Champs have been postponed for a year. Is there anything that worries you as a professional athlete coming up? Because I know a lot of people are, I can't remember who, apologize for forgetting, but somebody like a few weeks ago ran, I think it was Noah Lyles, ran 4 races in a day. And he talked about, oh, I'm doing it because of making sure I'm staying sharp and I'm making sure my sponsor still sees me and that kind of stuff. And I'm not in that world, so I don't know, but is that kind of things that you guys are scared about? What worries you guys from an athletic standpoint, or you, especially somebody who's only a couple of years into this?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely scary in the economy. Everyone's losing their jobs, and we're athletes, but we're not held to a different standard. And so I think Jerry and even like people that are higher up in Nike realize that we do need to make these races, and we need to make them count, because you know, things are on the line, rather, even if we're in the middle of a pandemic. But we just have to, you know, fight for our job like everyone else does. And I think our biggest worry is that the Olympics don't happen next year. And we just keep hoping that that postponement still happens and that we can continue on with what we do best, because it's definitely difficult when what you're hired to do and what you've been training for is just canceled. So we're working on looking at the positive side, but it's hard to not worry about the future.
I've got a quick question if I could jump in. First of all, John, remind me, what's your stepdaughter's name?
Izzy,
that was not a simple question at all. I thought that was a really insightful, good question. So nice job on that. I was really impressed. That was some insight there that we may have not ordinarily gotten. But Chris, I'm curious, listening earlier, you mentioned that Jerry said, you know, this is almost an exciting time because now we can just get really strong and get ready for next year, which makes a lot of sense. On the other hand, I'm seeing these events pop up and I'm seeing times that are otherworldly almost, right? So, you know, on one hand, you've got this long focus, I've got this extra year to train, but somehow in the midst of it, you guys are dropping faster times than anybody's ever seen in the United States ever, right? Yep. So I'm curious, maybe, and you could be as detailed or not detailed as you want, but from a training perspective, you know, how much different are you doing stuff now than you maybe would have been doing had there been a trials and a games and, you know, a European season and that sort of thing? And maybe if it's different at all, how that's affected, clearly for the better, what a lot of runners are doing right now. And I'm talking across the board. I've seen some sprint marks that are really impressive and some, obviously, some distance marks that are incredible, better than we've seen in years, and there's no goal. So how
work? I think it's kind of an exciting time because we actually get to race with no pressure and nothing on the line. We're getting to line up and just be like, this is our goal, is to go after this time. And it's like, just nothing else is on the line. That's the only thing to really shoot for. And I think we're just seeing these like incredible times produced from it. And for our group specifically, Shelby and I have kind of just like, we've been more relaxed, I would say, this season. Even like this spring was just kind of, it was a really weird time. We got split up, our whole group. So it was like me and her and some other girls, like just like you had like a one or two other training partners. And that was all you had. And we met at different tracks across Portland because we couldn't be in the same area and we couldn't have Jerry come to anything. And so Jerry's not coming to anything. So Shelby and I are running way faster than he prescribed because we're like, well, why not? There's nothing on the line. So I think we just kind of had a more relaxed but competitive and like a good competitive energy to it. And it just kind of carried on to when we did get back to with the group and we were at altitude. We just, Jerry started to realize that we like to push that envelope and we like to redline at practice. And so not everyone on the team likes that. And he'll just separate us off sometimes and he just gives us insane paces and we really like to chase after it ourselves. So I think this was, this race, as it may be like a surprise, is kind of a long, it was in the works for a long time.
No, I think that's really interesting. And I think just from a coaching perspective and certainly as an athlete perspective, looking back, you know, you do this, you train a little differently, you have a little different mentality and these marks come, you know, how does, hopefully that positively affects them maybe when you're actually, and not to say that this stuff doesn't count because it obviously does, but medals are forever and they're really amazing too, you know? So to be able to, you know, impart that or take some some reflection time on that going into an actual competitive season where there's medals and money and all that sort of stuff on the line. I just think there's something there and I'm curious just from the outside looking in to watch that and get some insight on that and maybe carry that over, you know, for future training and competition. So that's cool. Thank you.
Curiosity. Brinzy, did she always redline when she was at practice at Mizzou? Is that something normal for her? I mean, you talked about some of the workouts where she was sick and calling you up and disappointed, going, oh, my goodness, I can't finish these things. But it seemed like she's always redlining.
Well, yeah, yes, if we allowed her to, yes, she would. we felt like the biggest part of our job, you know, that at least, you know, late sophomore, junior, senior year, we figured out that a big part of our job was holding her back a little bit in practice and just letting her, you know, save it for the big races. And not, you know, she's incredibly blessed with a like very durable frame. Just, you know, she just hasn't, knock on wood, she just hasn't had a lot of injuries in her career. Right. So, so she's able to work a little bit harder than a lot of people and get away with it. Whereas some people, if they redline too often, they break down right away. And you still have to be careful of that for sure. But I mean, we had, you know, you know, Matt, cause I was texting you some of the workouts that we did and a couple other buddies. And I mean, some of the stuff that she did when she was at in our program was like ridiculous, you know, like you, so we let her go a lot, you know, we had certain workouts, right. We would let her go and, yep. and we'd say, okay, you know, this one's in control. Let's keep this one. But remember Friday, we're going to let you get after a little bit on the second half of that workout and really let you go. She's like, okay, good. All right, good. I'm excited for that. You know, she just likes to run fast. I mean, she just likes to run fast. That's the bottom line. So yeah, it was a challenge for sure to make sure we hit the fine line between allowing her to become the best that she could be and not overtraining.
That makes sense. So Chris, what was the, I remember Coach Burns shooting me some text messages on the workout and actually responded back like, did you guys go all out that day? Or like, was it meant like this? She's like, no, she was holding back for Friday or she was holding back for next week. And I was like, I wanted to just drop my phone because I was blown away by it. Some of the work. I was like, well, yep, she's ready. Because one thing coaches and I have always done is talked and called and said, I think this person's ready. They did X, Y, and Z. And I didn't even have to question that. I was like, my goodness, you're ready. But so what was the biggest transition? You know, you go from a place, you know, you go from Mizzou and Burns to BTC and Bowerman Track Club. Sorry, the BTC is here in town as well, the Birmingham Track Club. So the Bowerman Track Club and that phenomenal group of women. What was the biggest transition? Because from Burnsy to Jerry, from Mizzou to the BTC, like what's the biggest transition to moving up for somebody who's looking into like, maybe I do want to run professionally and I'm starting to get to that level?
Yeah, I think a lot of my career, like even when I was in high school, my parents, I think they saw what I was capable of and they kept being like, we're holding her back, we're holding her back. So I just remember them even like, I'd be like, oh, we ran 10 miles for our long run today. And they'd be like, oh, we need to talk to that coach. Like, that's too far. And they constantly wanted to just kind of hold me back a little bit because I think they could tell there was something there. And so even when I got to Mizzou, it was like, I got a little more freedom, got to push that envelope a little bit more, added miles in, that was very important. And then just like that consistency of not being able to stay healthy And I think that was extremely important that we just kept holding back a little bit, because once you get to that point where you are getting injured or you're overtraining, you just have to take more steps back before you can propel forward. And then the transition to Mizzou to Jerry was that just on like a whole nother level, because here I am working out with the guys at Mizzou and being like, okay, this is good. And I get thrown into this group of women that are almost dropping me. And I'm just like, what is this? I was like with the college guys, like I was keeping up well. And now these women are just like doing mile repeats off of short rest. And I'm redlining at mile 7 and they're going to mile 10. And so that was just very eye-opening to me. And I think you really like, you really develop into a new level when you test yourself against other people that are on a different level. Like, I think you really rise to that level of competition that you're surrounded around. And for me, I was just like, I want to be at that level and I want to be one of the best on the team. And I'm just literally looking at what everyone does, like sleep wise, recovery wise, eating wise. And I just wanted to skip that curve of like that learning curve that you get in the professional system. And I knew being with this kind of group, I could at least not have it as much, like have a shorter learning curve than most, because I'm not on my own and I get to ask all these questions to people that are very experienced at this level. And they've been through almost everything that I'm either struggling with or have questions on. So I think that was very important. And then being able to just kind of push that envelope a little bit more, not having school or other stresses on my mind. It's purely just every day waking up and being like, my job is to run today. And with Jerry's mentality, it was like, we're not taking off days anymore because this is your full-time job. And off days are when you're sick or injured. So no more of those just is that you just want to take because you're mentally tired of it. He's like, we're still going to go on like an easy 30 or 40 minute jog because this is your job and that's your rest day now. So I think everything just has progressed on.
I've heard a couple.
So Carissa, I got a sorry, quick question for you. Yeah, you know, like we're coaches and athletes, we're all masters of our craft and always looking for, you know, better ways to challenge ourselves and become better. What are a couple things right now that, you know, you're up at the upper echelon of your sport, really pushing to be one of the world's best? What are a couple of things that you're looking at to try to improve your game and your running?
Yeah, it's comes down to pretty simple stuff too at times. For me, I love just working on the little things that I can control, like working on my hydration. I'm not great at that. And when it's so hot or when we're training at altitude, I need to be better at just trying to stay hydrated throughout the whole day and prepare for a workout. And but one of the biggest things that I did at Mizzou that I think really changed from going from working out okay to working out like excellent was I started to treat these workouts more as like mini races. And I would just get like kind of that practice in that I would do before a race, like get more sleep before, like two nights out before a workout, and just like fuel really well before the workout. Make sure that I always have something in my system before we work out, even if it's at like 6 a.m. practice, I would still get up and have like a piece of toast or be up and like know that I'm like mentally ready to work out, not just like rolling out of bed and like trying to complete this workout. Cause for me, I wanted to get the most out of every single workout. And I knew that was just going to build on each other throughout the season.
Awesome. Thanks. That's great.
Carissa, just out of curiosity, because you've obviously run it, you know, a whole nother level this, you know, the last couple weeks in really small track meets, right? These inner squad meets. And throughout your career, obviously you've run in big meets, whether it's the, you know, the Iowa State Championships, the Drake Relays, the NCAA Cross Meet, NCAA Championships. And yet, and it's kind of a piggyback on Mike's question, you know, you run these great, you know, great times in these small meets. What do you, I guess, which do you enjoy? Do you enjoy these small meets? I mean, you said there's less pressure, obviously, but you're running these fantastic times out of it. Is this, could you see in the future, ask you to kind of look in your crystal ball a little bit, could you see these type of meets happening more on a regular basis where it's just, you know, a small 5K or a small 15 or a small relay? Just, again, it takes the pressure off, but they are different.
Yeah, I think these races are important, but they kind of set the stage for bigger races. For us, it's like Jerry always tells us, it's like either one or the other. It's like you compete really well in a huge race and you medal. Well, then the next race comes, it's like now you're confident enough to run the times that these people you competed against run. Or you run the time and now you're confident enough to race against these people that have run those times and can medal now. So we always just treat it as one or the other. And I think both races help each other a lot. You either get the confidence from the time or you get the confidence from the race. And I've done it either way at Mizzou, like placing third in my sophomore year. I, compared to all the girls that raced in that race, I did not have the times that they had. And I placed third. And then going on to that, going to cross country nationals and winning that. And then you look at my times compared to all, like maybe the top 10, they were not even comparable. And then in indoor, now we're knocking out those times. Like it's nobody's business. Like, so it's either just one or the other. And I think everything does come around just given time and those opportunities, but you don't get those racing opportunities very often and you don't get those time opportunities very often. So just not taking any of those moments for granted and really trying to excel at that spot.
It sounds like you've taken the, you and Jerry and you and Bernsey, when you guys are there, took a blueprint and you've had to, you had the plans, you've taken that, you've set that out. And you know, if anybody looks at a blueprint of a house, you set that out and have to have a plan for where you can go to build off that. So it sounds like you've always had a plan. Two questions here. I'll finish up with a little bit. One of them is, have you, what little, you know, you've talked about adjustments you've had to make in those plans. What's the, first off, what's the goals for the upcoming, well, for everything coming up? I mean, you just ran 4.02, you've run 14.26, which is number 2 all the time. What's the goals? I know it's probably an obvious question, but can you talk about those?
Yeah, for this upcoming year, definitely, I just want to be super competitive and I want to make the team, because I just feel like throughout all this hard work and stuff, that's been the main goal for quite some time. And to be able to say that you're in the mix for it is different than actually going out there and competing on that day and earning that spot. So I think it's going to be very hard and it's going to be really competitive. And I hope that I can excel on that day. And then on top of that, just obviously shooting to lower those times more. 4.02 is very hard pill to swallow. So we're going to try to go after that. I don't know when, but hopefully soon, and get under that mark, because that's been a mark that honestly I never even thought was possible. And then this year, training with someone that's run 3:54, seeing her and training with her every day, she constantly is telling me, she's like, you should be well under 4. She's like, there's no way you should be staying with me. And like, she does know that I redline very well. And so she gets frustrated when I am right with her, but I think we work out really well together. And she constantly is telling me like, you're in 14:20 some shape, or you're in sub-4 flat shape. So very exciting to have that kind of confidence as well.
I will say this before I hit this question. I think Coach Burns took a lot of heat on Twitter of like, is there any way you couldn't have gotten her ready so that when she got to, you know, she got to the BTC, she couldn't have run that 0.02 faster, you know, just that 0.02, and everybody was pegging Burns like it was all his fault. I don't know how it's your fault, Coach, but it is what it is. Last question I have, and I was kind of, I always think about this sometimes when you've done an incredible job, you're looking at the blueprints, you've got the archetype going, and you know exactly what you're going to do. When was there ever a time that you sat down and said, I've made it, I've got this figured out? Or was there a workout afterwards? Maybe you were with Shelby, maybe you were with at Mizzou, maybe you were somewhere and you're like, yeah, okay, yeah, I got this, I can make it. Was there ever that point? Or if so, what was that point?
I think definitely, well, whenever I talk to my grandpa, he always is making me look at that point. Every time we talk, he's just like, can you believe this? He's like, can you believe we're even talking about this? he's just like always in such shock. And so I think that just always definitely like humbles me and makes me look back and be like, wow, this is actually really crazy. Like, this is my job. Or, wow, I am talking about breaking 14:30 when maybe not even a year prior I was talking breaking 15. So just like realizing that, I think, is really important, and just kind of seeing how far I have come, rather than just always looking forward. It's nice to be like, okay, like, I've done pretty well. Like, let's just keep this ball moving, but I'm very content with where I'm at as well.
Yeah, the grandparents are people and relatives, and they're just incredible to keep you humble a little bit. And I know they love sitting back in your and just watching you take off and watching your family members take off. So, yeah, but wanted to thank everybody. Carissa, thank you for your time, for spending an hour out of your day with this. I know you've had a big night, some big races again going on tonight. The podcast might not get up in time for everybody to be able to hear what's going on, but I know there's another race next weekend, so that'll be exciting. But I want to thank you for your time, for the interview, and some incredible answers and incredible knowledge that you dropped on us. Coach Burns, thank you again for taking time out of your day. I know you're a busy man. You got a lot going on, especially the four boys at home and a little bit of a demanding wife. We love her, but a little bit of a demanding wife.
Oh, may need to edit that.
I know. Oh, yeah. I'll hear about this one.
Oh, you'll hear about it. Don't worry.
I'll get a phone call, I'm pretty sure. But I want to thank you guys both for doing this kind of thing. Izzy, you got to love it. That was a great question. Coach Herber's right. That was an incredible question. So nicely done on the podcast. That was something that, looking at my notes, I hadn't even written down. So that was tremendous right there. And I thank you for doing that stuff. For anybody that gets a chance to hear this week, take a look at USA.TV. Go to Bauer. Go to the YouTube's the Bowerman page for YouTube as well, the Bowerman Track Club. Also, take a look, please, at the Equal Injustice Initiative. Donate to that. Let's see if we can help the BTC get up to that $15,000 goal. I think that's great. We're going to put a link in our bio. We're going to help publicize that as much as we can. But if in general, everybody, if you got a chance, and this was something that you found interesting, you found like there's some good knowledge of and you want to help it out, please, by all means, retweet us, like us, write us a review on Apple, whatever the case might be. But word of mouth is without question the most powerful tool of advertisement. So please retweet us, tag us, do whatever you'd like to do. We'd love to be a part of it. If it's your first time listening, thank you. Truly appreciate it. Go back and listen to some other ones. But if anything, we look forward to making some more podcast magic and doing better next time. So, gang, Carissa, Coach Burns, thanks for having us. Thanks for talking.
Good luck tonight, Carissa.
Yeah, good luck.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Have fun.
Take care.